Well, I would certainly expect to see a franchisor having recovered his entire investment in the professional services he's invested in within 9 months of launch.
Hello and welcome to BrandTuned, the only podcast on branding, which includes related disciplines like intellectual property that are fundamental to growing a brand. I'm Shireen Smith, lawyer, brand strategist, and curious business owner, keen to discover what moves the needle in branding. Right now, I'm organizing myself as much as possible so I can focus on writing my book. I've recorded a number of episodes and have more in the pipeline with the aim of having 3 to 5 months worth of content to take us through to next March. We're going to take a break for a few weeks during the holidays at Christmas, as we usually close the business for 2 or 3 weeks at that time. So the podcast will also take a break. My guest today, Paul Mitchell, is one of my co-authors of the book Franchising Freedom. Paul has been a franchisor for over 35 years, building and running independent franchise brands. And he's been a franchise consultant for 24 of those years. So, Paul, over to you. Tell us a little bit more about your background.
Thank you very much, Shireen. Well, probably like a lot of people, I started off in franchising accidentally. I don't think anybody ever starts off life imagining a career as a franchisor. I was an estate agent and I accidentally started franchising my estate agency business back in 1980 when a friend took redundancy from one of the building societies and asked if he could put some of our houses in his window when he opened an insurance brokerage. And I suggested that maybe we might go one stage further and put a sign over the door as well. And I didn't call it a franchise at the time, but that's what it turned into. And that's really when I started my journey in franchising. And along the way, I've worked in franchising now in 8 different countries. And let's say I've built more than a handful of networks along the years.
So what were your challenges at the beginning to set up in this way?
Well, the big challenge that all franchisors have, and I was no different, it's bringing all of your collateral together and then following that, looking for your first franchisees. It was probably not until 1990 when I was building what became my first very big franchise network, and I'm speaking as a franchisor here rather than as a consultant. It was only when I started building my first big network that that I really needed to start thinking more strategically about franchising. And it took me probably best part of a year to bring together all of the documentation that I needed to launch the franchise. And I think that's the biggest challenge that most would-be franchisors have, how to get started. And I started without any professional help. I'm a completely self-invented, self-taught franchisor. Probably my worst enemy in that regard, insofar as I didn't engage a consultant, although nowadays as a franchise consultant, I would definitely suggest that anybody that's considering franchising always should. And a good comparison is if a new client said to me today, go ahead and get me on the market as a franchise, I can have them ready for market within 10 to 14 days. Whereas when I launched my first network, it took me 10 to 14 months to get the franchise ready to go to the market. And I think that's probably the single biggest challenge. But if somebody's properly advised, it's the easiest challenge to deal with.
So you had somebody effectively testing the concept. You had a successful business, a good friend who was running a test site effectively without the documentation or any legal agreements?
No, I was the I was myself the I was the pilot. It was a business in both of my early stage franchise organizations. I developed the core model and we ran it straight to franchise stage with the operational business as the pilot.
Sure, but you had a successful estate agency business, nothing in place to franchise, and then your friend came along. So how did that progress, those first few months?
Well, yes, I mean, we that's the interesting big contradiction to everything that is good practice and proper procedure in franchising, because it was so early in my career as a franchisor, and indeed relatively early in franchising as a business model here in the UK. When Mark came on board to take on that franchise, we didn't even have an operations manual in those days, and I would never consider suggesting to a client now that they launch their franchise without an operations manual. But it worked, and I subsequently sold the business, the entire business, along with the franchise network 6 years later to one of the building societies.
So how can you get somebody up and running in 2 weeks?
It's about being well resourced. We're a team of some 30 people here, which in a corporate context isn't an enormous team, but by franchise consultancy standards, it's enormous. Most franchise consultants are one or two man bands, quite often run from home. We're a 14 office network covering the whole of the UK and also stretching out into the Middle East as well. But we're a fully integrated team. We've got our own graphic designers, marketeers, and pulling together the documentation is the least of our challenges. Whilst everything that we do is 100% bespoke for the client who has engaged us, we've got a library of literally hundreds of franchise models that I've developed over the years that are an absolutely invaluable resource in terms of getting a client ready to the market.
Essentially, do you send someone to observe the business and then write down their processes so that you've got all the documentation ready quickly, or how does that work?
Well, that's not really a sort of black and white process. During the preliminary stages, leading up to the client formalizing his relationship with us as a client, we will have learned a fair bit about the business. And combining that with what's in the public domain, we can start to compile the first documents that are needed to get a franchise onto the market. And all we're talking about at this stage is getting a franchise onto the market. The initial documents comprise basically the prospectus, which is the what I call the wriggly worm at the end of the sharp hook. That's the document that sells the franchise to prospective franchisees. And that we generally pull together within 7 days. And That's followed by a disclosure document, franchise information memorandum, which is still a marketing document, but it contains all of the business case information, all of the sensitive business planning materials and financial data that franchisor doesn't necessarily want to put out into the public domain. And again, that takes us probably about another 7 or 10 days to do. And with those documents in place, we can launch the franchise onto the market. Because what we have to bear in mind is, unless we're exceptionally fortunate, it's probably going to take us a couple of months to identify and properly recruit the first franchisee. So we've got the luxury of time to then spend with the client to pull together the operations manual. And then alongside that, we will also draft the franchise agreement. So it's probably about 12 to 14 weeks of work there, but there's 4 key documents that we're producing alongside one another. But we only need the marketing documentation to actually breathe life into the franchise and announce it to the waiting world.
Do the first franchisees get a more favourable set of terms?
Well, it depends how you look at it. I firmly believe that if a business model is right for the market, then there should be no reason to discount the franchise fee in order to recruit the first franchisees. That having been said, the franchise fee will evolve as the network grows, but that's more to do with supply and demand rather than the opposite, which would have been discounting the franchise fee.
So how did you come up with the name of your business? You know, it's called Accentia, is it?
Accentia. And there's never been a day when I haven't cursed coming up with the name Accentia, because everybody pronounces the word differently, and everybody initially uses it more with a question mark at the end of it, in the same way you've just done there. One of the things that I learned a long time ago, if you want to successfully trademark a brand, you need to come up with a word that nobody's ever used properly before. And that's how I arrived at Accentia. It wasn't quite the case of sticking a pin in a Latin dictionary, but that's kind of where the process started. And Accentia itself is not a Latin word. It's a brand that I've derived from bringing together some influences of various languages to come up with a brand that is distinctly unique to us.
So it's a made-up name.
Absolutely, which is every bit as much a curse as a blessing.
So what else did you do to create your brand, your business brand?
In terms of corporate identity or branding?
Well, what is brand in your view? How do you regard it?
Branding is a very broad subject. It involves the name of the business. It involves the style of the business in terms of its look and feel to the external world. But it's also about the business model. And unless you have all of those combined together, I don't think that you can claim that you've got a brand.
Did you hire a graphic designer to create, after you'd chosen your name? How did you go about doing that?
Yes, I did. As I said earlier, nowadays we've got fully employed internal design staff here at our head office that do all of that work for us and for our clients. But when I was launching Accentia as a brand, the first thing I needed to do after I'd come up with the name was get somebody that I felt had some empathy with the work that we do, and he developed the logo and the corporate identity for us.
Okay, and what about how many franchise businesses did you have before just focusing on franchise consultancy? Just the one or more?
Well, as a franchisor, I developed and sold on 9 different franchise brands myself as a franchisor, and I've done that in sort of various locations around the world. And subsequent to setting up Accentia, I've developed another franchise organization that as franchisor I run alongside Accentia. And Accentia itself manages exclusively the recruitment processes of 57 franchise brands at the moment, all of which, bar 5, we've really developed from the ground up, and the other 5 are well-established franchise networks already who have identified that they can better deploy the resource looking after the existing franchisees whilst outsourcing the recruitment process to us.
So you've got a fair amount of experience. What sort of industries have been involved?
As an organization, we're fairly agnostic. From a personal point of view, whilst I rolled out the Subway franchise for them in Spain, my personal specialization is in professional services franchises. But as a director team here at Accentia, we've got over 2 centuries of board level franchise experience across a very, very wide range of sectors, including the food sector. I have as a colleague, one of my colleagues was operations director at Domino's, franchise director at Burger King. I've got colleagues that have served at board level with KFC, PepsiCo, Pizza Hut. So we've got an understandable, fairly high level experience in food sector franchises, but equally I've got colleagues that again have worked at a senior level in the care sector and the cleaning sector. And outside of that, we've got clients for whom we've built very successful networks in health and fitness and sports franchises.
How long does it take for a franchise to really take off and repay the investment that people have to put into it?
In terms of an individual franchise unit as a franchisee or as a franchisor?
No, as a franchisor, if somebody decides that they're going to grow through franchising, it's quite a big outlay initially. So how long might it take before they can repay any loans they take, and so on?
Well, I would certainly expect to see a franchisor having recovered his entire investment in the professional services he's invested in within 9 months of launch. And the critical point behind that and the objective is about recruiting franchisees. After a good while in franchising, and this was the subject matter in terms of my contribution to the book we were involved with, Franchising Freedom, I've seen too much of an unhealthy obsession within franchise consultancy towards what I call the shiny stuff. Too much time is spent focused on developing the documentation and not enough heed is given to the most important function, which is finding franchisees. There's absolutely no point having the world's best operations manual if you've no franchisees operating your business. So if a franchisor is properly focused and suitably advised on the most important point, which is identifying and recruiting franchisees, they should certainly have full return on investment within 12 months of launch.
So what is a professional services business? I mean, I can think of Tax Assist as an accountancy firm, but who else would be?
Well, I've franchised the state agencies on the residential side, commercial estate agents, business brokerage franchisees. That's what I would consider a professional services franchise.
Okay. Well, how about digital marketing agencies? Is there scope for them to franchise?
Yeah, I've developed a number of digital marketing agencies, but I would probably more class that as a creative franchise or a sales and marketing franchise.
And you would actually help them to recruit franchisees?
Yes, our typical client relationship is measured in years rather than in months. Most consultants will work for a client during the development stage. They'll write the key documentation and then they'll pass the recruitment work back to the client. But the client is probably ill-prepared for that type of journey because there isn't a great deal of sincerity in the process of inquiring about a franchise. And my experience with franchisors that have tried to manage the recruitment process internally is that they just can't, they can't afford to resource it. A, because they themselves don't have the time, and B, because they don't want to employ a full-time resource internally.
So what about when they want to go international? How do you help them then?
International franchising is always the objective of many franchisors. But I always say to franchisors at the early part of their journey that in the same ways they needed to demonstrate that they had a viable business before they started franchising, they need to demonstrate they've got a viable franchise before they look at international franchising. The international market's not a level playing field. The majority of the world, like the UK, is an unregulated franchise marketplace, but there are a lot of parts of the world where franchising is either partly or, in the case of the United States, extremely regulated. So it's something that if a franchisor is ready to do it, they need to make sure that they're at the right stage of their journey and they're properly resourced and able to do it. We as an organisation are currently working with a number of clients where we're helping them to, in an international context, document the franchise because that needs a slightly different perspective. But from our office in Dubai, we recruit franchisees for clients across the whole of the Middle East, the Indian subcontinent, and in Australia.
Well, trademarks are extremely expensive in the Middle East. That's what I think of when I think of Dubai.
You've absolutely got a point there. It's and not easy to enforce. But a client needs to make a decision in terms of what lengths they want to go to protect their trademark. And not every business needs to or wants to invest the kind of capital that they might have to get a fully protected international trademark. But that's one of the reasons why I say to clients, get your established get your franchise established within your domestic market, first of all, because you're going to need that return on your initial investment to be able to consider rolling it out properly on an international basis.
So who is suited to buying into a franchise operation?
I think most people are suited. The thing that I often say when I'm asked a very similar question to that, it's more about who's not suited to buying into a franchise. I've often said to people, why are you thinking of investing in a franchise? It's a fairly sensible question to ask somebody that's just about to make a fairly major investment of their life and of their of their savings into a business opportunity. And if somebody says to me, oh, well, I'm interested in a franchise because it's kind of like sitting in between having a job and being in business, that chills me to the bone even saying it now, because investing in a franchise is nothing like having a job. It's 100% like being in business. And but I don't think that franchisees necessarily need to be hardened entrepreneurs. And it does suit people with that slightly less of a entrepreneurial tendency, because they do have somebody looking out for them. They do have a business model that's been tried and tested, where one would hope all the mistakes have already been made, which is why, for the main part, those investing in a franchise will succeed in business, and for the main part, those investing independently in a business will unfortunately fail.
That's very valid points you've made. So finally, Paul, which brand do you particularly admire, especially in the franchising world, and why?
Well, I don't think that's a straightforward question, because I think any brand that manages to take their project to what I would class as critical mass, which is 10, 15, 20 franchisees, absolutely have to be admired. And I'm going to quote the old franchise cliche and say, obviously, I've got absolute respect and admiration for McDonald's, because whilst they're not a perfect franchise organisation, they have created the framework under which sort of modern day brand franchising is really based.
Sure, they're a brilliant example. So thank you very much indeed, Paul. That was really useful.
You're more than welcome, Mike. I hope that it was interesting for everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
In next Friday's podcast, episode 47, I'll be interviewing Charla Dinkoy, the CEO and founder of The Repositioning Expert. She's the author of 4 books, and she's also a former brand manager who supports her clients to get their messaging super clear so they attract more business. If you've listened to the podcast to this point, please do like, share, or rate it. If you have an important message to share that would be relevant to listeners, then do connect with me and let me know. You can find me on most platforms, but perhaps the best one to use is LinkedIn.